On today's Emerging Tech Horizons podcast, how the PPBE Commission's report is going to fix the way the Pentagon develops and delivers emerging technologies. Hi, and welcome to the Emerging Tech Horizons podcast. I'm Arun Serafin, Executive Director of NDIA's Emerging Technologies Institute. Today, we're going to be talking about the PPBE Commission, which is the Commission on Planning, Programming, Budgeting, and Execution Reform, in its final report that was just released on how to fix the Pentagon's budgeting process and the implications for the emerging technology sector. Joining me to discuss this are my two great guests. Ms. Lara Sayer at the end there is the executive director of the congressionally mandated PPBE Commission. She has a distinguished career in the defense comptroller community, working in the Air Force, Navy, and SOCOM. And joining her today is one of the commissioners, Jennifer Santos, who's currently the VP and Chief Strategy Officer at Draper. She formerly also had positions in the Navy and the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and was a senior staffer on the Senate Appropriations Committee Subcommittee on Defense. So, Lara, let's start with you. So this acronym, PPBE, what does it stand for? What does it mean?
So it stands for the Planning, Programming, Budgeting, and Execution System. And that's the department's resourcing process. So think about a financial plan that a company would put together, but instead of it being a 10 or 12 month process, it's more like 2 to 3 years before you would actually execute.
And the different phases of that you described, planning, programming, budgeting, execution, tell us a little bit about what goes on in each of those.
Well, the planning phase, as it currently stands today, produces the overall planning guidance, the defense planning guidance, that gives us a little more detail in the department about the national defense strategy. Once that comes through the OSD policy team, then CAPE takes it over, OSD, CAPE, the cost analysis and program evaluation team, and they build the program objective memorandum working with the services and components. So that looking at it from a more programmatic perspective. And then there's a handoff to the budgeteers in the comptroller realm, and they put things more in budget speak. So they take everything apart from a programmatic perspective and put it in the stovepipes of RDT&E, procurement, operations, and maintenance. And so it's a very bureaucratic process, very stovepiped, and people work in their own areas. And then it sort of crashes together at the end when we send the budget over to Congress.
So this notion of, and you talk about it in the report, taking this strategy, turning it into programs, turning that into an actual budget, and then sending that budget over to Capitol Hill to turn into an appropriations bill. And then the E part is actually doing something with the money when it shows up.
Correct.
Right. And so why a commission? It sounds like that's an okay process. Why do we need a commission?
It's a pretty clunky process, I would say. I mean, while it's worked well for, you know, decades now, with the threats changing, with the emergence of China, the way technology is changing today, and DoD is no longer driving R&D, it's more on the commercial side, that this 2 to 3 year process does not allow the agility and adaptability for the way all of these things are changing at the same time.
Can't keep up with the speed of technology.
Cannot.
Right. Okay. Commission declared into existence by Congress, and you're told to stand it up. So what was the structure of the commission?
So the 22 National Defense Authorization Act established the commission. All 14 commissioners were picked by different parts of Congress, so it's fully bipartisan. So different members of Congress, majority, minority, nominated yourself and Ms. Santos, as well as Bob Hale and the full list of commissioners, and then a couple were nominated by the Secretary of Defense. Once everybody was sworn in, you picked your executive director, me. Mm-hmm. And I had the honor of trying to hire a team, let contracts, and figure out how we were going to attack the research that Congress has directed us to do.
So in addition to the commissioners with our experience, Jen's experience, my experience, all the other commissioners, there was this staff, very experienced folks with program management and financial management backgrounds,
yes,
industry backgrounds. And in addition to that, then we tapped into outside expertise.
We absolutely had to do that.
Had,
yes,
multiple listening sessions, engagements with both the Pentagon industry and the Hill to build this fantastic volume of information. So, okay, after all that, or final reports released now in the last few weeks. What are the major themes?
So when we did over 1,100 interviews, and we did 2 years of research, and as we distilled all that information and had those conversations, it became clear that there was five critical goals that we wanted to make sure any recommendations fulfilled. So these goals are themes, number one, improving alignment of budgets to strategy. So making sure that strategy is really driving the budgets that we're putting together and submitting to Congress. The next big issue was innovation and adaptability. So one of the biggest complaints, other than continuing resolutions and not having on-time budgets, was the fact that the process just does not support innovation and adaptability to changing threats and changing technology. Another big issue is strengthening the relationships between DoD and Congress. While DoD and Congress do work together, there's some inherent tension with the two different branches of government, but it could be a better partnership. And I don't think we'll ever move at the speed of relevance if there's not a stronger partnership there.
Because it's an interesting process in that it's owned by two branches of government. Pieces of it are dominated by the executive branch, but other pieces are dominated by the legislative branch. Correct. And that presented a really interesting challenge to sort of navigate, right?
Yeah, they all have different perspectives and different areas of interest. And then the other two goals, I would call them more foundational or enabling, although they're equally as important, modernizing our business systems and data analytics. DoD is far behind the times.
The computers and IT that run the process.
Correct. I mean, just think that how we transmit data is still PDFs and flat files, that we're not using modern tools to exchange information or even to drive decisions at speed. And then lastly, of course, is the workforce, which is that's the engine that makes everything happen, is strengthening the capability of the resourcing workforce.
So in those, then, you know, there's this innovation and adaptability pieces, but all of those other pieces tie into emerging technologies. It sounds like one of the drivers behind the whole thing, Jen, was this desire for a system that's less clunky, that's actually more relevant and able to keep up with innovation. So what are some of your favorite things that might touch the world of emerging technologies?
So spending the last 2 years on the commission has been a really great experience with the interviews that we received. We had small businesses, large businesses, tier two size companies. We had industry partners from around the different sectors, software, hardware, come speak to us. We had interfaces with executive branch folks, legislative branch folks to talk about how can we increase technology introductions into our national security ecosystem. But it really takes a triad, right? It takes, you say, the executive branch and legislative branch. Without industry, there would not be an executive branch to build weapon systems. And so primarily the reason we looked at this fostering innovation, which is definitely a kind of an overused word, but is really to bring capability that is countering the threat that comes about quickly, right? And as the national defense industrial base shrinks, we need access to other industrial bases. And so a couple examples are, one of the ones that starts this off is changing the budget structure and having access and understanding of what's going on. So as the leadership in the executive branch now talks a lot about counter UAS, they stand up portfolios to look at that. Well, so if you're an industry partner trying to find where that money is, it's very hard to go find, and where's the aggregate demand signal? So if you get to that level, then you have a better understanding as an industry partner. Consolidating the RDT&E budget authorities, right, into going from 8 down to 4 makes it easier to move money.
So that's talking about the structure of the budget.
Yes.
And how it's divided up into pieces that generally follow the way that technology in theory is developed.
Correct. So going from BA,
basic research
one, yes,
to prototyping,
correct,
to full development, mm-hmm, and then to production. And so I suppose in some accounting universe, it makes sense,
yes,
to divide these,
yes,
things up into 7 different categories,
correct,
right now,
correct,
under the way DoD does R&D.
Yes.
But in practice, I guess we're saying that's not really the way things
absolutely
are done.
Absolutely not. Money doesn't move. You don't ask for money in year one in BA one and then year two in budget authority two. You ask for money based on the work that you're going to go do.
Right. But so, I mean, I think comptrollers understand that, program managers understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Who cares that there's 7 different accounts. Why is that a problem?
Well, it's based on an industrial era model that doesn't apply to today's technological environment, right? So even whether it's software or UAVs, they iterate at a faster speed. I spent most of my career in program offices or working with science and technology. And I remember at ONR having something that was in BA3.
Budget activity three, kind of advanced technology development.
It was going through test. You know, the test went as it did and things proved out not the way we wanted. So we needed to go do some rework. Well, they determined the work should have been BA2. And so then all of a
which
sudden,
which is more like applied research, according to the terminology.
But then I had my money in the wrong spot. So then I'm having to find ways to move money around, and even moving $1 million or $500,000 in the year of execution, you can take up to 3 months because you're trying to find a source. And
And meanwhile, like you're saying, the industrial base is waiting.
Absolutely.
Right?
And universities. So if you look at the university side of this, they refer to it as fundamental research. And that's budget authority, basic research plus applied research. BA1 plus BA2 equals fundamental research. So even our partners in the universities can't track, make it easy for them to track and understand where we're making investments.
So I guess one of the themes here is that if the department is going to try to talk about moving technologies this way, then it needs to be able to actually move the money to match the technologies that way. It needs to also understand that the process sometimes iterates on itself, right? You go backwards sometimes to go forward two steps.
Absolutely.
But then the other point you made is, if you're going to talk about counter UAS, let me find it in the budget so that I, as an industry partner, can know where to look.
Yeah, which increases the probability if you're an industry and you're looking at, I want to go invest, my company works on counter UAS. I want to know, is there a demand signal for the work that I'm doing? Who's responsible for making those decisions? How much are they investing? And then therefore, as an industry partner, I can say, all right, there is an aggregate demand signal. I can see where the government is going. I'm going to go invest my internal research and development money. I'm going to go and invest my internal capital equipment money to go after that.
And in the end, that means the department is getting a lot more money into the counter UAS in this case than it actually has to spend
on
it.
Absolutely.
So that all sounds so positive. Who could possibly be against that?
Well, you know, it's going to be a lot of work to change that, right? And so there's examples where this has already been done. Not the consolidation of budget activities, but the consolidation of line items, right? And so there's a first step at doing that, right? The special operations community, their research and development, their procurement money, they've already done a consolidation. They did that 8 years ago where they put in, we have avionics lines, we have, they have a autonomous vehicle line. They've done that in production and in development. And so you can see where they're doing that. In the chemical and biological weapons portfolio, they did that as well. And so they consolidated their research and development into two budget lines. So now they can work on the demand signal and have a better understanding. And they did the same thing with procurement. But that's easy to do in smaller organizations. Doing that across the entire defense ecosystem is going to take a bit more work.
That's a good one. What else you got?
So let's talk about internal DoD reprogramming requirements. There's a lot of conversations about below threshold reprogramming and above threshold reprogramming. The differences between the two is the dollar threshold and the purpose, time, and amount. So if you change the purpose of what you're doing, you have to do an above threshold reprogramming. If you're changing the time, you have to do an above threshold reprogramming.
And that means saying, and then the dollar amount. I asked the Congress for money for this particular activity, but my idea has changed. I need to do something else.
I have $5 for the cup, and now I need $50 to develop the cup. And it's more than what I have.
And so above a certain threshold of dollars, you have to go back to Capitol Hill and ask their permission to move the money.
Yes.
And those are the above thresholds.
Correct. And there's a limit in the appropriations bill on how much general transfer authority you can move. And so one of our recommendations is to take the general transfer authority responsibility and give some of it to the services.
So that would ease the bureaucracy inside the department, but still allow the Congress to have the approval that they want.
Correct.
And this is to deal with fact of life changes, cost increases,
correct, threat changes,
technology improvements.
Correct. So a new emergent technology comes out, a new quantum sensor comes out, and it's not planned with the cup. They want a quantum sensor for the cup, and they didn't ask for it originally when they asked for their appropriation or authorization bill. So now they've identified the quantum sensor is ready to incorporate, and they need to do a reprogramming to go do that.
I would say one of the things I love about this particular recommendation It doesn't require any change to legislation or regulation. It's just a practice that needs to change internal to the department.
It's already legal.
Yes.
And it's just a, it's not a, it's a training and cultural issue, I guess. Is that right?
I would say yes. Yeah.
You might have some FMR changes.
Financial management regulations.
I don't think it's in the FMR for General Transfer Authority. Okay. Yeah.
It's just how
it's just the practice.
Yes. Yes. And in that same reprogramming area, there's other ones we recommend, right? Increasing the thresholds. So instead of it being a 10 million or 10%, 10 million or 20%, whichever one is lesser
of an account
for RDT&E, or 20 million or 20%, whichever is lesser for procurement. So RDT&E and procurement have thresholds. We're saying to increase that, which is a nice positive step, but that we also recommend, if the department wants to be bold, is to look at total accounts. So this is one that I'm pretty excited about, but I know it's gonna cause, it's gonna be a harder one to implement, is if you look at the research and development for the Army. So research and development Army is one appropriation title. If you look at that entire title and say, all right, you're gonna move, you need to move sensors across, you're gonna move weapon systems development across, you're gonna change things, allowing for the services to move the money within that account and giving them a percentage, one to 1.5% of authority to move within that account in a given fiscal year. And therefore, the service acquisition executive and the financial management community can make those decisions real time. Right. And that would remove, if that was implemented, that would remove needing to do below threshold reprogrammings.
I noticed in the report, as I was working on it with you all, that mm-hmm. we did a lot on what we call colors of money. Mm-hmm. Right. And mm-hmm. so as I understand it, and you guys are way more expert in these things than me, you know, there's different colors of money: R&D money, procurement money to actually buy things, operations and maintenance money to keep things running in the field. There's money for personnel and military construction. And so what are some of the things we tried to, one, what are the challenges with all of these different colors? And what are some of the things that we tried to recommend on the colors?
Well, I'll say the good thing about colors of money, it lets you know what's happening.
Which
right?
is good, right? Right? The money is taxpayer money.
Yes, absolutely.
And they need to know what's going
so
on.
So if they're in development, you'd want to know they're in development. If they're in production, you want to know they're in production. You want to know they're in sustainment mode. But the truth is, as you think about software, software crosses the colors, right? And even hardware crosses the colors, right? Let's look at microelectronics, right? An emergent tech, an area that I say is one of our national security, largest national security risks. Microelectronics evolve faster than a weapon system. So if you put the latest and greatest chip inside your weapon system, by the time you start production for that, when you develop it, by the time you start production, it could be obsolete. And so one of our recommendations is to allow for continuing hardware improvements with O&M. So you take out the old chip as you're in development, or actually you can't even produce it, and then you start into O&M. Now you're in, you have weapon systems out there, and you want to upgrade their technology, you have to stay within the same form, fit, and factor and technology
based
off of the
Because O&Ms. That's the kind of money you have.
Correct.
Right. So the kind of money you had is driving the decisions you're making about upgrading your program.
And it's the time frame, right? Diminishing manufacturing sources is a real problem in national security, right? Just like I described. But if I'm going to put in a new chip, I want it to be the state of the art. Right. So if I want to go put the state of the art chip into a program that's still in production, I have to go back to RDT&E and start the process over. We're saying, no. Use O&M, use operation and maintenance money, and put in the state of the art for that DMS part.
And people are familiar with the pilots that are going on right now under
software
that you mentioned.
Correct.
They're called Budget Activity 8.
Correct.
And so yes. I think the commission looked at some of these and decided they are working, not working, doing okay.
I think we're fans of BA8, but it's still limiting and still creates another seam, because when you're in a program, whether you're hardware intensive with software or software enabled by hardware, you're going to have multiple colors of money. And 2 to 3 years out, you're going to guess what the right ratio is for the year of execution. What's going to happen is when you get to, you know, your funding's released to you, you're going to realize half the time that you don't have the right ratio. And if you read the financial management regulation, good luck to you,
right,
trying to figure out what it really is telling you, and you get a different fiscal attorney and they're going to tell you something different as well. So it overly complicates things and slows programs down, having to do reprogramming actions.
Right. And meanwhile, like theme here, industry is waiting. Mm-hmm. So Lara, on that point, it was interesting to me how much of this is so based on the interpretation of individuals in different parts of the yes. Pentagon and their fiscal lawyers about what a program manager and a comptroller are actually allowed to do to respond to an industry signal that there's a new capability here or a threat here, or the program needs a different kind of money. And there's a bunch of things that we highlight that are things that are legal and that the department could just already do itself. So what are some examples of things that could be done to let the department be more adaptable to new technologies that don't require legal changes?
Well, there are existing authorities that aren't being used today, right? And so some of that's just a lack of training. That's one of the reasons we encourage the creation of a handbook. I know it doesn't sound very sexy, but I can tell you, as new ideas come out or that people just aren't educated on it, the Defense Modernization Account is another great example of that. I don't think it's ever been used.
And that was put into law decades ago?
Yes. Yeah. And then reauthorized not that long ago.
Okay. And what's the intent?
So it allows expiring funds to be put in this modernization account from savings and other efficiencies.
Funds that the department was not going to use.
Right. That they, that was left over, I guess, more or less, to help with other issues related to acquisition. Mm-hmm. So it's, it gives the department the ability to take time to develop these ideas and then execute the money and not lose it. Right. Every year we lose about $8 billion or more canceling. And so this would help solve that problem where the department makes its money go farther.
Yeah. Yeah. And when that money expires, it goes back to the Treasury, which is a good place for it to go too if it's not going to be used. But in some cases, a new threat came out and you can put in a new technology. So that it's almost like its own fund. Right. And then it highlights which emerging tech categories are important to put that money into. So right. Now you have this way to, at the end of the year, oh no, we've got this new capability we want to bring into, you can use the expired funds to modernize.
And I would also say some of the challenges with colors of money, we talked about software a little bit already, but we're recommending that any color of money be able to be used for development, procurement, and sustainment of software. It depends on where you're at in your program, the type of program you're at. Really, all the FMR just needs to be updated. Right, it's 7,000 pages.
Congress doesn't get involved in updating financial management regulations. Is that right?
They don't. They might get directive at some point if the department doesn't start really updating it. Because what has happened in the past is they'll update a section and not pull the thread all the way through. And you'll go do some research and you'll find one section says this and then another section completely contradicts it.
Okay. And so then the inconsistent, slightly in contradiction guidance freezes the whole system in place.
Yes.
Okay. One of the things I found interesting was, we talked a lot about the valley of death, right? The difficulty of moving technologies from R&D to prototyping into production and then into use and these different valleys that appear. And part of the valley is due to technologies being ready. Part of it's due to culture. Part of it's due to the way money is handled. And I thought it was interesting that we heard stories of certain parts of the department that actually address some of the valley of death issues by doing the simple thing of, if you're going to invest in research in a program, you should anticipate that your research might actually work. And then if your research actually works, you're going to put some money in the next bucket, prototyping, let's say, to pull it over. And it was interesting to find that didn't actually happen in a lot of places. We're spending money on science and technology and early stage research, and it's almost like we think it's not going to work, so we won't put any money in the next part of the budget. Yeah. And that's really not a congressional thing. That's a programming thing. Exactly. But there were other people who actually tried to fill in that part of the valley just by using their programming process. I don't know if you saw similar things.
Yeah, no, absolutely, right? And it's not moving inside the RDT&E accounts from the different budget authorities. It's getting into a weapon system, ultimately to have an effect on the mission. Right. That's what the whole PPBE process is, not just, it is a resourcing process, but ultimately to protect our country. Right. And so if a new technology comes out of the science and technology world across the $12 billion that it's in science and technology, a weapon system like the CUP needs to know that that's happening. And so the programming process, like Lara said, it takes 2 years, right, to come up with the programs. And during that time, something has changed. actually many things have changed. And so one of the things that we recommended in here too is establish authority around between milestone B and milestone C, which is ending production or development and starting production. During that transition time is a really sensitive time when new technologies come online, right? Which may have not been part of the original development of the program.
So when you get into what's called
money inside of there,
when you get into what's called milestone B, you've sort of graduated from the science-y and technology world. You're in real development.
Correct.
You're starting to build a program, and
right.
you're trying to do this march to what's called milestone C, which is
production.
I'm almost ready for production,
yes.
and final testing. I'm ready
yes.
to go. That's
yes.
a critical period where
Absolutely.
Lots of things could change.
Yes.
And it's actually probably the time when you want to ingest as much advanced commercial technology as you possibly can. That all is, I guess, requiring this different way of thinking about how you build your program
Correct.
And then how Congress looks at it as well.
Yes.
So in terms of this myth busting, you know, are there any other you know, great myths that you would, you know, we should talk about? And I'll just warn you both, we're gonna get into the role of Congress and CR further, so you don't have to go down that road.
I would say a lot of folks that I've talked to over the last 2 years tend to think that the budget structure is something Congress dictated, but it actually is not. Largely, the Department of Defense has, I guess, done it to themselves by their very 17,000, you know, different line items or whatever. It's a ridiculous number. It's probably 1,700. But I've only seen very few cases where Congress said, have a line item for cyber or have something for sexual assault. It's really department making all these different seams and doing it to themselves. And so really it's on the DoD to think about a better way of doing it. We've recommended several different approaches and now they have to work hand in hand with Congress to make it happen. So,
another myth buster. Who sets the roles for obligations and expenditures?
So what are obligations and expenditures?
When you put something on contract and when it delivers. So obligate, I'm going to go buy the cup. Expend is when I receive receive the cup and make payment for the cup.
And so the
Who
rates.
Who sets the roles for the percentage roles? This is a
you're
fun
quizzing
conversation.
Me?
I know, but it's okay.
I'm going to say it's not the Congress.
It's OSD Comptroller,
okay.
right? And so OSD Comptroller sets the roles. And we all, if you live in this world, you have that one page taped to your wall somewhere.
Yes.
Everyone's got it meant. I mean, if you don't, sorry, we can give it to you. But it shows.
And it tells you how quickly you're supposed to spend your money.
Yeah, by the end of the first year of development, you're supposed to have 55% expended. Right. And so we've got that entrenched in our brains, you know, for procurement that we don't track expenditures. You only track obligations. So it's when you put the cup on contract, not when the contract delivers. But the truth is development and production have merged.
Right.
Right. When you build a weapon system and you prototype it, you usually do research and development funding for it. And so you're delivering hardware. But on the OSD Comptroller roles, if it's hardware, it sits in procurement and you don't track the expenditures. So we're saying here, OSD Comptroller, you have the ability to change this. You have the ability to make it easier to consume. Now that practice has been in practice since I started working in the Pentagon in 97. And so the percentages have never changed. And so we're saying it's not just a percentage, it's what type of work you're doing inside there too.
And I guess I would, from the emerging technologies perspective, when you think about a science and technology program, especially
yes.
earlier stage, the idea that you can predict the rate of your spend, of course you need to be a good fiscal manager
Correct.
And you can't waste money, but the spending is naturally going to be lumpy in time.
Absolutely.
Because the work is lumpy.
Well,
yes.
And the performers are different. It's not the same as a weapon system, right? A space system or aircraft.
Or paying payroll every 2 weeks.
Right. Mm-hmm. So for science and technology, a lot of times you don't do some of your work or testing until the summertime. And so you're going to have a lag in that, in those expenditures. Or your small business or universities do not bill the same. But they set the execution goals at the total appropriation level, assuming that a little science and technology project would execute the same as a space system. And
right.
it will not.
Yeah. So the other myth that comes around with that is operation and maintenance budget is a 1 year fund. And at the end of the year, everyone is spending their money because if they don't spend their money, it goes to the Treasury. So what are they spending it on? It may not be a requirement that's an important requirement at that point in time.
You see a lot of flat panel displays on the walls and stuff like that.
Or a lot of paper in warehouses or extra printers. But those are just examples of it's not black and white in many of these cases. And so we need to give the authority to both the executive branch and industry to be able to execute based on what's going on.
So that was the first half of the conversation with Jen and Lara on the PPB Commission's reports. Tune in next time for the second half of the conversation, where we talk more about the role of Congress in all of this budget reform.